All right. Erin Kunkel is the co-founder of Maven. She's a speaker and co-host of the Maven Parent Podcast. She has spoken to parents, moms groups, homeschooling groups, and at women's retreats and events. Erin and her husband, Brett, have 5 kids. Their family has attended Grace for almost 10 years. For therapy, she goes to used bookstores and looks for treasures. She has a nerdy life goal to go to all the presidential libraries around the country. So far, she's been to 11 of the 13. She loves coffee and margaritas and just got back from her first trip to Israel. That was life-changing. Erin.
Thank you. Oh, it's so good to be here. I miss being a mentor mom. I was a mentor mom for five years here, I think. Had to step out a couple years ago because of family stuff going on, but I sure miss you guys, and I love that you let me come back and talk to you. So, and I do just love being with other moms. Okay, let me make sure this works. Okay, there, yay. Okay, so, I love being with other moms because I realize that motherhood is such an important job. And how I'm raising my kids is something that I think about all the time. And as I look back on my motherhood journey, I've realized that for me, it has been really tough, actually. And I've had lots of highs and lots of really low lows. And at times, I've thought this might be the end of me as a person. But actually, the way I started motherhood was rough. I was 17 years old, a senior in high school, and I got pregnant. When I graduated, I was 5 months along, and had my daughter Lexi during my first semester of college. And as a single mom, I had to do school, I had to work. So it was hard, crazy hard. And I ended up meeting my husband, Brett, when Lexi was 1, and she was 2.5 when we got married. And I was only 20 and still had 2 years of college to finish when we got married. So I've had some bumps along the road, some self-inflicted bumps, to be honest, in the beginning. But Lexi turned 25 last week, so, and she's a mom, actually, herself. So I'm a grandma of little Annie, who's 2, and Sadie, who's 6 months. And I didn't get a picture. I know, it's terrible of them. I know. But I have a bunch on my phone if you want to see me after. So now being a mom and adding 4 more kids, so 5 total, really, motherhood has become one of the great joys of my life, even through the hard things. And although I started young, Lexi actually, when she was little, she was an easygoing kid and pretty compliant. So even though I was a single mom and, yes, having struggles and trying to figure it all out, her and I, personality-wise, were very similar. We still are similar. And so I started to think, you know, this parenting thing wasn't as hard, I think, as everyone makes it out to be, especially like that mom that I would see with the kid throwing a fit in the grocery store. I'd be like, come on, lady, just say no and get it together. Then my second child arrived and wrecked my entire world. First of all, he was a boy, and I grew up with all sisters, so a boy was different. Also, marrying a boy was hard for me. My first year of marriage was difficult, I think, a lot because of that. Well, he only had brothers, and I only had sisters, so we got married, and we were like, what is wrong with you? So I have this boy, right? New territory. And then he's extremely strong-willed, and this starts to come out early. And by the time he's 6 months old, he's throwing fits, throwing food, burning me with his eyeballs. And now I was the desperate mom at the grocery store going, I have no idea how to handle this situation. I did not get this kid at all. He was so different than me and not what I was expecting. And I started to realize that my two kids were quite different and were very unique persons. Oh, I forgot to show you the picture. Okay, there's me and Lexi. That was my first Mother's Day. So I was only 18. I had turned 18 by the time she was born. She was about 6 months there. And then this was the latest family picture I could find. So there's Lexi with her husband, Sean. And that's little Annie, but she's two now. So it's hard to get everybody together, you know. And then there's our four other kids. So I'm realizing, okay, kids are different. What has worked for Lexi, which is just like saying no, and she was pretty compliant, is not going to work for this kid. His personality is so different. I don't really like his personality. So how am I going to handle this? And, you know, in this culture we live in, we have to realize how we're influenced to think about this idea of uniqueness and how we're made. Because our culture has a lot to say about it. 21st century American culture, what we are swimming in all the time, has a lot to say about who we are and how we should be valued. And our uniqueness is what we can create our entire identity on in this culture. So common slogans, you do you, right? That's a really popular slogan. Believe in yourself. Express yourself. Do what makes you happy. No boundaries. The world takes the truth that are of our uniqueness, and twists it. And it can often be used as a tool of self-worship, or what our identity is completely rooted in, or both. So instead of being image bearers of the one true God, we become a God to ourselves, of ourselves. What we want, what we like, what we desire is what matters most. So what follows from this? Well, one thing that follows for sure is we should not let others tell us what to do. Complete freedom. And freedom in some ways in American culture has become an idol. And freedom, though, is not just doing what you want to do anytime you want to do it. That's not actually true freedom. True freedom is being able and willing to do what you ought to do. There's an oughtness to it. But in our culture, there's no oughtness to any of us. You don't have to do anything. You aren't bound to do anything. And so the whole slogan, you do you, there's no oughtness there. There's no obligation there. But can you imagine if we actually raised our kids like this? So imagine being at the playground, at the park, and your kid's playing with another kid, and the other kid's a monster, and you're like, okay, this is not fun. We're going to leave. And the parent comes up and tells you, yeah, sorry about my daughter. It's her heart tells her to cut in line and to hit other kids, and it makes her happier when she does that. So I just let her follow her heart that way. Okay, that would be silly, right? It would be ridiculous. But some of these slogans, that's exactly what they're suggesting. So ironically, we have to understand what is the same about all of us, before we can actually appreciate what's different and what makes us unique. So what makes us human? There's two truths about human beings that we cannot avoid and that Scripture makes very clear. One is that we are made in the image of God. We are image bearers, imago Dei. We bear his image. We are made to be co-creators with God. We are made for relationship. We have emotions. We have gifts. We have abilities. We are made male and female. We're made to live moral lives. And he's created us uniquely. Not one human being in all of history is the same. Wow, that is amazing to think about. The other truth that scripture is clear about is that we are rebellious and we are broken. So Genesis 3 is where we read about the fall with Adam and Eve. And then throughout scripture, we are reminded, Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All of us, including our precious babes that are just teeny tiny, we all have fallen short. So this should be the starting point when we think about our kids and we think about how to guide them and love them best as parents. These two truths that we have to kind of hang in the balance, right? Because we never want to communicate that their weakness is more important than what's right. And this is what we see in our culture with people who understand their giftedness but are not rooted in any kind of moral life or obligation. And I'm thinking most clearly of Hollywood celebrities or professional athletes who obviously are gifted in amazing ways, athletically or whatever, but there's no connection to the moral life often. And so it just is this self-worship, I'm amazing kind of thing. And when they don't have that, actually, it's refreshing and awesome, right? Like when you hear about athletes who aren't just about their own self-worship, you're like, wow, that's amazing. So this this truth alone helps my husband and I, for example, just how we praise our kids and recognize them for things. We don't recognize things like sports, academics, over things that we see in their character and the people that we see them becoming. We hold that in higher esteem than accomplishments. So when it comes to encouraging our child's uniqueness, if we do so without the foundation of goodness first, it can lead to a self-centered child. Or it can lead to a parent that makes excuses for a child's bad behavior by saying, oh, that's just how they are. And so, again, this is just the delicate balance that we are going to walk as parents, knowing how amazing our kids are and also knowing that they're sinful and rebellious. So this is why I want you to think about this question. And this is, again, something that my husband and I have reflected on a lot as we've raised our kids. But do you primarily want for your child to be happy? Or do you want them to be good? And when I say good, I mean God's good for them. They're good. Now, I can't define that completely for each kid, right? But you get the sense of what I mean. Do you want your kids to be happy or do you want them to be good? Now, those aren't necessarily conflicting ideas, but at times, I guarantee you, they will conflict. And what will you choose when it comes to that? And we communicate this to our kids all the time, that we are primarily after their good. So when we make them do things they don't want to do, we remind them that we are doing this for their good. And we will communicate that to them so they know it, even if they don't have the maturity to understand it, right? Because our end goal, of course, with our kids is that they will learn to be obedient to Christ and to seek his good. That's our ultimate goal with our kids. That it's not just this self-centered good that they're always thinking about, but ultimately that they would follow and transfer that to wanting God's good. So in this area, with all five of my kids, who, and the more I kept having, lo and behold, they were all different. And not only did they look different, but they are so different, inside and out. So no matter their temperaments, no matter their gifts, no matter their personalities, I have certain expectations for all my kids regardless of that. So one of those is how they respect my husband and I as their parents. No matter their temperament, no matter their personality, the expectation is the same of respect. How they respect other adults, how they treat their friends and others. Kindness, sharing, hard work, perseverance, truthfulness. These are expectations I have for all of my kids. Now, some kids struggle more than others with certain things of these, right? Some kids are more apt to be courageous, to do things that is against the flow, to do what's right. Other kids have a really easy time being kind, sharing. Some kids struggle with sharing, right? Other kids, it comes really naturally. So here's a way that I think is a good way to think about it as you're thinking about it. So the backyard fence. The backyard fence, oh, sorry, I forgot that one. So this is a backyard fence. So picture a fence that you have built for your children to live in and flourish within. So the expectation, though, for all the kids is to stay in our backyard fence. These are the non-negotiables that I'm talking about, my expectations for how they treat others and behave. But within the backyard, there's freedom. So they can go down the slide. They can build a crown out of dandelions. They can dig in the sand. They can do cartwheels. There's freedom, and that's where our uniqueness and personalities flourish, right? But it's within these boundaries of a fence. So within the fence, there are areas that we should be without expectations for our kids. So these are the areas we shouldn't have expectations. Personality, passions, and gifts, to name a few. We could probably think of more. For example, I had three girls. All three of my girls loved Barbies and dress up, to my great dismay. I did not do that when I was a little girl. I liked to go out and play. I liked to play instruments. I liked to play with the boys at recess. I never played with dolls, and I never did dress up. And all three of my girls loved Barbies and all the princess stuff. I mean, they loved it. And there was not a thing I could do about it, right? So those are the types of things that we don't get to choose. And we just kind of have to go with. And it's our job to discover these children that God has given us, that he's made and given to us to raise and disciple. So notice the things that they do and make them light up and that they enjoy. So for example, one of my girls really has always loved kind of acting like an adult, like being a mommy, vacuuming, dusting. She loved cooking, and she just loved all these things. And so when she was about 9 or 10, most afternoons she would say, "Can I bake something?" And I'm thinking, no, because you're going to mess up my kitchen, and I just cleaned up from lunch, and the babies are napping. No, you may not bake. And it was so mean, actually, when I think about it, because there was a long time where I just said no. But she got so much joy from creating in the kitchen that I needed to recognize that and let go of a clean kitchen, teach her how to clean it afterwards. Of course, that's coming. But it was just part of who she was, and she loved to create, and she is still a creator. She does it in all different areas, but still loves to bake. And so that was just something about her personality that I needed to appreciate, not resent. And then, of course, she's baking stuff. So I'm like, we can't have cookies around the house all the time. This is terrible. So then we started passing them out to neighbors, which is great, right? So accepting the things that they love to do, even if we don't love to do it, and finding ways for them to do those things. And then also on the other side of that, noticing their struggles and comforting and reassuring them that you understand. So for example, I have two of my five are extreme introverts. And so, and one is he's getting older now. He's not so introverted, but still has that about his personality. But when he was little, he was very introverted. And when he was five, one time, I remember him coming to me and saying, "Mom, can we please just have a day at home? We're just going, going, going all the time." And I mean, we weren't even doing that much in my perspective, but that stuff doesn't wear me down. I can go, go, go all day. So I realized, oh my gosh, why are you having a nervous breakdown right now? But I realized, oh, he needs downtime that I don't need. I don't need it. So how do I love and appreciate this thing about him that is so different from me? And I have another, my other introvert, extreme need to know what is coming. So every night, including last night, when she comes to say goodnight, she says, "Mom, what are we doing tomorrow?" And I have to run through the day. So she'll say, "Okay," you know, and she gets that in her head and she's like, "Okay, I can handle it." Now she is my introverted one. So if we have activities out, she has to prepare herself for that. And I remember when both of them were little and we would pull up, you know, to a friend's house or pull up to, heaven forbid, a party. And I would say, "Okay, honey, we're going to go in and you can stay right by mommy. That's okay. But we are going to go and say happy birthday to whosever birthday it is. We're going to thank the mommy and daddy for having us over. And then other than that, you can stay by me and you don't have to talk if you don't want to." So I learned. And how did I learn that? Well, because disaster happened many times where I got to the place and I'd be like, "Say hi. Oh my gosh, you're so rude." You know, and I was breaking down because my kids that did not like these situations that for me were so natural and easy, they were breaking down and it wasn't working and they were not being the children I raised them to be. So, and then on the other side I have one of mine is extremely extroverted, more than me, more than anyone I know. And so by the time he's 2 years old, I'm realizing I've got to get this kid out in the world for a little bit of time every day. You know, it's just mandatory. Even if it's just walking next door and saying hi to the neighbor, he's got to have some time. And for me, I remember thinking, I have to have times where I can let him go and not say no, 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 no all the time. I don't know if you guys think about that. If you have, you know, especially toddlers, but it's nice to go to places where you don't have to say no. Do you know what I mean? So like the beach was a good place. Although I found myself saying no there because he would go and talk to random strangers. And I remember one time this guy at the beach had headphones on and Jonah walks over to him and is just talking away. And the old guy's like, "Who is this kid?" And obviously didn't want to be bothered. And I'm like, "I'm so sorry." And so it's always a balance, right? But it's knowing this need in him to just be out, be moving, be social. And how do I feed that in a reasonable way, even when it's not necessarily something I want to do? So it requires intentionality on our part. We have to be intentional with knowing our kids. And this often means undistracted time with them. And especially you can imagine with five kids in the house at the same time, I have to have intentional time to stop and realize who these people are that we're all living together. Do you get what I mean? And even if you have just two, or even one, the busyness of life, our phone, keeps us very distracted. And so having time where your intention is completely on them and you're intending this time to be a discovery more of who these little precious creatures are that God has given us. So alone time is very good. And alone time can be filling up the washing machine with us, but it's just the two of us and we're talking, or going to the store, just the two of us, or taking a walk, or whatever. It can be all kind, or maybe it's getting down and doing something they want to do, like playing Legos or something like that, where it's intentional time that you are not distracted, you're purposely not distracted, and you're focusing on listening and observing them and who they are. I put some questions on your handout of just, you know, fun questions to ask them as they get older, of course, and they're able to talk and verbalize things. So, and knowing, too, the best times to talk to your kids is really important. So I have two early risers like me. These two kids, every single morning, including this morning, are up with me before everybody else. So these two kids, I know that their best time to talk is in the morning. So one of them is my daughter who drinks coffee with me. So oftentimes in the morning is when I'm saying, "So, how was this yesterday? How did that go? How are you feeling about this today?" And just touching base with her. If I try to do that at night with her, it usually ends in tears and the world's all falling apart. And, you know, there's a lot more emotion because she's tired. She's not really a night owl. Now, on the opposite end, my night owls, if I try to talk to them in the morning, like, "What are you doing? Why are you talking to me right now?" And they cannot relate with me in the morning at all. Now, unfortunately, they want to talk at night when I'm ready to clock out as a mom and be a regular human being and not listen to anybody anymore. But this is when my night owls want to talk. And I remember when Micah was in kindergarten and I would pick him up from school and, "How was the day?" "Fine." You know, that's what you always get. "How was the day?" "Fine." "Okay, good. Did anything happen?" "No." "Nope. No, nothing," right? And then I would be putting him to bed at night, and we'd read a few books, and then he would be sitting there kind of quiet, and then it would come out. "You know, today we..." "Oh, really?" "And, you know, today this kid was mean to me on the playground." And we'd talk about that. And so I realized at nighttime, even though at that time I had a newborn and I'm like holding my eyes open, "Yes, I want to listen to you." This was when I knew I could hear his heart and reach him. So I had to adjust myself to how they are personality-wise and realize these are good times to connect with them and these are not good times to connect with them. So time in the car, at store, eating snack, when other siblings are in bed. So be creative. I'm not saying you have to go do excursions all the time to connect with your kids, but just make it a rhythm of your life that you are having intentional time with the kids, especially as they get older and start communicating more and more and more. So verbalize for your kids the things that you see in them. So even as adults, we need this kind of encouragement and affirmation, don't you think? So because we're good at parents as noticing and saying when something's bad. We notice right away when they're doing something we do not want them to do. We often skip over when they're actually doing something we want them to do and what we're expecting of them. So for a while we did jars at home and we did puffballs, and they would get puffballs if I noticed them doing something good, doing something without being asked. And honestly, it was as much for me as it was for them, because seeing the jars would be a reminder for me, notice what they're doing well and don't just focus on the criticisms of what they're doing wrong. So, and that's why I talked last year about compliments on my kids' character. When we're out and they get compliments on their character, that's something we reward in our family. Because, again, I want those things to be affirmed even more than the giftedness that all of them have. So another thing I think that is helpful in loving and appreciating our kids and the unique way that God's wired them is to tell others what you see in your kids and to encourage your child in that. So what I'm mainly thinking of here is your spouse. So regular conversations between mom and dad. Now, most of us moms are with our kids more. So we are automatically going to just see more and notice more, right? So a regular conversation with your husband can be about what you're noticing about your kid and then getting his input on that and figuring out how you love and discipline, if necessary, best, and all of those things. For example, when my son, who was the strong-willed and wrecked my world, when he was 2 and I was so over him and I was sick of him throwing fits and I was like, I can't believe how stubborn that little of a person can actually be. And one time when I'm, you know, complaining about it to my husband, he said, you know, stubbornness God can actually use for good. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then he's like, no, really, think about it. And he said, you know, some of the big world changers, stories you've read in history, these people are stubborn. And he said, you know, God can use that stubbornness. And he said, imagine when he's a teenager and he's stubborn for what's good. And he doesn't let everybody push him into something bad. And then I was like, oh yeah, that could be good. Because that's not how I was. And I saw, oh my gosh, actually God gave them this gift. And I was looking at only in the negative. And God wanted me to see it also as a positive too, because there is a positive, right? There's positives to all these things about our kids, positives and negatives. So talk to your parents, grandparents, if your kids are spending time with them, other family members, friends, babysitters, teachers, whoever they're close to, especially if they need to be pushed in something. Right? And like if your child's starting a new class, it's fine to tell the teacher that they're shy, but I do, you know, but you can encourage them to talk, but they are shy. So anything that they have to say in front of the whole class is probably not going to happen or they're going to be terrified of. It's okay to advocate for your kid that way. And that's what I've had to do with my daughter Ella, who's extremely introverted. And the thought of speaking in front of people, well, she would rather die. So, you know, as we've been in classes and co-op things, and there was in kindergarten, you know, when they do the poster, like, all about me, and then they're supposed to come up, and they share, like, just different things about them. And you just hold up the poster, and you just talk about the few things. And it was her turn to do it, and she did her board, but she said, Mom, I can't do it. So I said, okay, well, what if I come with you and I stand next to you and do it with you? And so she said, okay. And so we went, and you guys, she stood with the poster and literally a word could not come out of her mouth. Now, she wasn't tortured. She didn't cry. So at least that makes me feel a little better. But she couldn't speak the words, right? But that's okay. I encouraged her to do it. She did stand in front of the class. She didn't talk. Fast forward a few years later, there was a time again of sharing in front of a group. So she said, I can do it here at home, Mom, but I just can't do it in front of everybody else. So I emailed her teacher and said, could we record Ella doing her thing at home and I can send it to you? Would that work for her grade? And her teacher said, sure, no problem. Fast forward to last year, at the Christmas Eve service here, I forget who, somebody asked Ella to read a Bible verse in front of church for the Christmas Eve service. So when I got the email, I laughed because I'm like, that will never, it's really sweet of you to offer. That will never happen. And I asked her and she said, okay, I'll do it. You guys, and she did it. She did it. Now it was just reading. She didn't have to share, but she did it. And I think it's just been the slow pushing, but also loving and security. So it's not just been that I've thrown her out there, but I've appreciated this about Ella, and I've tried to be tender about it, but still pushing her a little bit because it's good to do these things sometimes. So verbalizing to people they're with, grandparents, they're really struggling with this. So we're just not going to bug them about this right now, you know, or it's okay to push them in this or whatever. So communicate. It helps other people love your kids. And so part of that is the next point, accepting their limitations, appreciating their uniqueness. For shy kids, you have to be patient, especially if you're not shy. You have to be patient. It's a long journey, right? But they can, like I said, when you go somewhere, you can say, we're going to look them in the eye and we're going to say hi, but then you don't have to talk anymore. And you could stay right by me, okay? So I'm pushing them. I'm not letting them just stay there, but I'm also appreciating it. So knowing their weaknesses and helping them to grow. My oldest daughter, every single time she had a new social situation, a new team, a new school, whatever, she freaked out, cried, begged me not to make her do it. But what happened every single time is she would go and then she'd be fine. She would push through it. So I'm sure parents at this track meet that we were at thought I was nuts because she's standing there on the line crying and sobbing, please, Mom, don't make me do the long jump. Please, please. She wanted to sign up for this track meet. I didn't make her. This was her idea. And now we've signed up, I've paid, and she's begging me not. But I know her, so I know that I just need to get her through that fence and go and do it, and she'll be fine. But I'm sure any parent who is watching me was like, what a psycho mom. Are you living through your kid? Like, you always wanted to do high jump? No, I don't want to do high jump either. She wanted to do it, but I knew I had to push her to do it. And then sure enough, she did it. She came back with a smile. And I said, you're welcome. Remember this next time you're crying. And there was a next time and a next time and a next time. But I knew her. And I knew she had to be pushed. And it's been important in her growth as a person of trying new things and pushing herself in uncomfortable situations. So let them try and fail. Let them try and fail. There are valuable lessons for giving new things a try, and we always encourage our kids to try something, even if it's just for a little while. And also, it's good for our kids to see things that they can't do, to see that, yeah, they're unique in this way, and there's also a lot of other people who are unique and gifted in something too, and maybe even better than them. That's a good thing. So, yeah, just Lexi always wanting to give up in sports, give up in this, stop anything, anytime something got hard. But I knew for her, she had to be pushed. And that's really how we loved and guided her best. So I think this is the last one, and then we're going to do some question and answer. But understanding how you're different from your kids and how this can be a point of conflict is definitely something you need to be aware of. It's easy for us, like I said, my first daughter and I are very similar personality-wise. Another daughter of mine is also similar personality-wise. It's so easy for me to get them. Like when they're crying about something, and my husband's totally opposite than me, and he's like, why are they crying about that? And I'm like, I get why they're crying about it. I would be crying too. Like, we get those kids. It's the kids who are different from us that we really have to make an effort to love and understand and appreciate how they're different. So I've had to make special efforts with my kids who are different from me, and it does not come naturally. And my two introverted kids, what seems to come with that is they both have an intense ability to sit and be patient with activities. So one time my son got a new Lego set, and I sat with him, God bless me, for that whole time and helped him build the Lego set, and it was such a bonding thing with him. It's not like we were even talking that much. He's very concentrated on it. But I just did it because I didn't want to do it, but I knew, oh, this would be a good thing to connect with him on. So pushing yourself to do that. And as I think about my own childhood, this was a struggle because I was the black sheep in my family. I was quite different than my three sisters in a lot of ways. And my mom was not always good at making me feel okay with that. It was quite clear to everyone that Aaron was different, but what wasn't quite clear to me especially was that that was okay and that that actually could be good. So I always felt different, but not necessarily in a good way. So we want our homes with our babies to be the safest place on earth for them. And this is also why I have like literal no tolerance for sibling bitter fighting and insulting, because I want the home to be a place where you are appreciated for who you are and it's okay to be who you are. And then of course, in light of the fact that we're all sinners living under one roof, right? So within the, again, the boundaries of the fence. So remember that you can have a profound impact on your children by showing that you value and respect their uniqueness. And I read the story of Thomas Edison a number of years ago. You guys know who he is, right? We pay the Southern California Edison bill every month. Anybody else pay that bill? So he was America's greatest inventor. He developed tons of stuff, the light bulb, the sound recording, motion pictures. So he, though, as a child, got kicked out of school for being a troublemaker. And the teacher wrote his mother a note saying that he was dumb, that he would never amount to anything, and that, you know, he was basically a mess and she couldn't tolerate him anymore. So his mother pulled him out of school and began homeschooling him. And every day she gave him what she called tinkering time. So she's seeing something in little Thomas, right? Having no idea what he's going to become one day. But she, just as a mom, was so intuitive to know that. And she gave him access to advanced books, so books that were way above his level, and allowed him to create a laboratory in the basement. I mean, how cool is that? I didn't even want Paige to bake in my kitchen, and she let him do a whole lab in the basement. So by the time he's 12, he's becoming a successful entrepreneur. So she passed away when he was young, in his teenage years. But this is what he has said about his mother. This is what he said about his mother when he reflected on her. He said, "I did not have my mother long, but she cast over me an influence which has lasted all my life. The good effects of her early training I can never lose. If it had not been for her appreciation and her faith in me at a critical time in my experience, I should never likely have become an inventor. I was always a careless boy, and with a mother of different mental caliber, I should have turned out badly. But her firmness, her sweetness, her goodness were potent powers to keep me on the right path. My mother was the making of me." Is that amazing? Do you hear the fence, the firmness? It wasn't without a fence. He needed a fence. All little boys need a fence. Her sweetness and her goodness. She saw in him what nobody else saw. The Imago Dei. He was an image bearer. His mother knew it, and she appreciated it. So we have been trusted women with a precious gift in raising our children. And we are not alone. We are not alone. We can ask God for wisdom, and he is faithful. Proverbs 2:6 says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding." When it comes to raising our kids, he is our source of wisdom and knowledge, and he knows them even better than we do. I don't remember if I put Psalm 139. Oh, I did. Okay, good. Psalm 139. You probably have read this one, but it just talks about how deep God knows us and how we can tap into him when it comes to knowing and loving our kids. "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me." You know them. "You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar in all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain." And verse 13, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." Okay, so did I spark any questions in you? I think, oh wait, do we have time for questions? Okay. Any questions, or did I mess you all up? Mm-hmm. So by separating, does she eat a separate dinner time than everybody else?
No, it's usually that she's sitting there for so long that the other two are excused upstairs for bath time, and that afterwards she'll sit and eat. She's just not excused from the dinner table.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So why is she not eating? Is she just talking, or is she? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Okay, so I would say this. I would say she would be the last person to sit down at dinner. So don't make her sit early, like right when everything's hot and ready. Okay, come and sit down. Okay, so appreciating the fact that there is a limited time capacity that she has to sit still, and that's okay, but we want to push her in that because we want to do family meals, we want to go to grandma's birthday dinner at a restaurant, we want to be able to function as in human society. So you're gonna have to learn to sit through meal. At the same time, we can appreciate the fact that, like, when we go to a restaurant, I'm gonna let her play outside on the grass until the food actually gets there. Things like that, okay? So there's that, just appreciating the fact that you have a limited time. Second of all, you can make rules that seem ridiculous but fit the situation. For example, no singing at the dinner table is a rule in my house because I have a couple kids that will sing and talk and never eat dinner. And, yeah, everybody else, you know, especially the quiet ones, focus, they eat, they're done, you know. So I've made crazy rules. Like, you can't share another story until all the broccoli is eaten off your plate. Again, it's like someone looking in would be like, "You're a psycho." No, I just know the broccoli's not going to get eaten. It's going to get cold, you know. So So catering to the fact that, okay, you can share a story and then I need you to eat 3 bites of your chicken. Then you can tell another story. No singing at the table. So it's, she's not doing it in malice. And so you're seeing that, you know, it's not necessarily, but you do have to sit for a certain amount of time and you have to eat with us because this is what humans do, you know, kind of a thing. So, and then it's just patience. But I think having standards is okay. But then understanding that for some kids, the mealtime is a bigger struggle than it is for other kids, right? So appreciating that and helping them to grow in that, I think is good. So I know it's hard. They're so different, huh? Yeah.
So I have a second grader. Uh-huh. But she is a wiggle worm in the public school, and she gets in trouble for fidgeting, talking, and not seeing her feet properly. She's getting down. Do you have any, like, suggestions to kind of advocate but not hinder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So I think talking to the teacher and advocating looks like, I know she's frustrating you, but and telling the teacher, I want her to obey you. I'm telling her that at home, but saying, but I see in her that it is really hard for her to sit for this long, and so is there anything you can do to have her sit for a time, but then also get to go to another station or whatever? Maybe can she bring something to school that's keeping her little hands busy while she's listening? Some of my kids, like the craziest one I have, which is my number 5, you would be amazed at how long he will sit and listen to me read out loud. You would be amazed because this kid's crazy. But how do I get him to sit still? Well, I let him use his hands every time I'm reading aloud. So he's drawing, he's painting, he's putting Legos together. He's doing anything being quiet. But I cannot ask him to sit still for 30 minutes. It is physically impossible for him. So maybe incorporating something like, maybe she can learn to crochet. And she could sit when she's done with her math lesson and crochet. Maybe there's, you know, they make all kinds of stuff, like little puzzle things that she could do quietly at her desk. But this is hard, right? Because we know them. And so it is hard when they're under the care of other people. Because we're saying, can you please help accommodate their uniqueness? But I do think a teacher appreciates when we say, I want them to respect you. I'm telling them to obey. They're getting in trouble for doing this without asking. But I'm wondering if you could help me in this way. But, yeah, crocheting is so quiet. And you would be surprised at how quickly kids pick that up. Yeah. A Rubik's Cube, she might become like a master Jedi in that if she could play with that for a while. You know, she just needs to move. It's totally normal. And the teacher knows that. The teacher's just stuck with, I have 30 kids and I can't, yeah. So you can advocate for her as mom and maybe, you know, help with that in that way. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would let him doodle because I knew that was how he could sit and listen. But then the kid next to him was like, can I have a marker? Can I have an end?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the whole group is, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's more like that's not their issue, but now they're attracted to this whole group.
And then now it's a distraction for them.
Like that teacher would be awesome if you could let the little person crochet, but then how do you create an environment that.
Yeah. 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 Now you have scarves being knitted everywhere. Class is being taken over. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And the school setting is actually just a bigger setting of family, right? Because so you're just taking family on the smaller scale. So what does Brittany do with the one who can't sit still? The other ones can, but now they see sister gets to go do this, and now we've lost everybody, right? So that's why the fence is important. So that's why there are expectations, appropriately so. So a 4 and 5 or 5 year old teaching Sunday school, there are times where, I know exactly what you're talking about, Amy, because I've taught Sunday school for so many years. So there is a time where you say, you realize, you know the kids that have a hard time. And so sometimes those are the kids that get to sit by me while we do story time, because they do have the ability to sit. I'm not asking much. I'm asking 10 minutes or something. So they do have the ability to do it. So in that way, it's like, no, you're going to need to come and participate. Maybe you're holding the felt board up while I do the story, you know, so I am trying to think outside the box. How can I pull them in, but also make them do what everybody else is doing? And that is big scale of what we do at home. Anytime, if you're going to have more than one kid, if you don't have the fence, then it, anything goes, and one's going to do it, and then the other one's going to do it, or the other one's going to say, well, he doesn't have to do it, so why do I have to do it? So that's why the fence is important. Certain standards are important. A 2-year-old cannot sit as long as a 4-year-old. So there's that. There's just knowing and appreciating that. A little girl can sit longer than a little boy. It's just science. And if you are questioning that, go help in the 2- and 3-year-old class on Sunday. Like, there is no question. The girls play, they don't touch each other, you know, they're just like pushing the babies around, they take turns, they share. The boys can't keep their hands off each other, and they're, you know, so we have to be aware of that. Appreciate it. There's nothing wrong with boys, I've learned. I had to learn that, but I literally said to my husband, something is wrong with him when he was like 13 months, because he kept crawling on my head and like wanting to and I'm like, what is wrong with you? Why don't you just play with your toys? I wasn't bugging you and you're attacking me. So, you know, that there's good in being a boy. I'm just not one, so I had to learn to appreciate it. But there are things that we can hold our kids to, and we want to push them where they're weak. Okay, we don't want to run away from it. We want to have courage to push them where they're weak in a loving, wise way, but we don't just leave them. If your kid is a natural leader, you don't just let that go without boundaries. You teach them about leadership. You read to them about Jesus a lot and show him the kind of leader he was. You talk to them about, hey, do you notice how everyone follows you, but so-and-so always gets left out? Tomorrow, when we go to the park, make sure you get him to come with you and show the other kids that they need to include him. That's what we do with our kids who are leaders. We don't just let them tramp all over people. We show them what good leadership is. We still have the expectation that they're kind, that they're thoughtful, even though they want to run the show. So that, again, seeing Tracy in here reminds me. My son Jonah, from the time he was 3 or 4, was leading groups of kids to Tracy's desk for the suckers after church. Parades of children. He would be like, come on, come on. And so I was like, first, did Miss Tracy say you could do that? Yes, okay. And then I would say, okay, well, make sure you aren't leaving kids out when you do that. And I didn't really want him to do that. But you know what I mean? So I'm, okay, kids are following him. So I want to help him not lead them off a cliff. And I want to help him to see people that maybe he's not noticing. So that's where we push them. Appreciate it, but we push them. And don't make it just an excuse for them to just be bullies or whatever. Okay, last thing before I go, Oh, I left them back there. If somebody could pass them out. Our organization, Maven, we do a parent conference every year. It's for parents actually and grandparents. And really, church leaders, anyone who's discipling the next generation. So it's geared towards people who have kids 0 through 18. This year, we're doing it at Calvary Church in Santa Ana, just in Tustin. And our main topic for the conference is the dangers and delights of technology. So we're going to talk about navigating our kids through this culture, and specifically with the topic of technology. But we actually cover tons of different things. So anyways, put that on your calendar for you and your husband to come to, maybe your parents if they live around here too. It's going to be a great conference. And to our organization, Maven, my husband and I do a parent podcast. And if you want to get on our mailing list and just know when things are coming out and things are happening, you are welcome to fill this card out and we'll get you on our email list for that. So, and also if more questions pop up and you want to just talk, my email is my name, which is on your outline, Erin Kunkel, the number 4. Because I did it when I had 4 kids. Poor Jonah. He's just not included. So that's how long I've had this email, you guys. So erinkunkel4@me.com. And I love to talk kids and mothering and all this. So if you ever need a friend to talk to and bounce things off of or hear about all the mistakes that I've made with my kids, feel free to reach out. Okay, love you guys. Have a good discussion.